Practical precautions for protection. We should always be prepared. Proverbs 22 verse 3 says, a prudent man foresees evil and prepares himself, but the simple pass on and suffer for it. It was not raining when Noah built the ark, but Noah and his family survived the cataclysmic flood by building the ark and stocking it in obedience to God. Of course, this took many, many years and a lot of hard work. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob each enabled their families to survive successive famines by following the guidance of God and taking the appropriate steps. God led Joseph to use the years of plenty to store up sufficient grain to feed his people throughout the seven-year famine. Ecclesiastes 9 verse 12 says, for man also does not know his time, like fish caught in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Snares and traps are horrible things, and to be caught up in a net is not good either. And in this way, we are warned that there are evil times that can ensnare a person and trap a person if we're not prepared. So how prepared are you for crisis situations? I mean, what can go wrong? There's a whole range of things that can go wrong. We're living in a fallen world that's in rebellion to God, and there are a lot of people out there who've got very malicious designs. Christians should wisely anticipate danger and make provision for times of scarcity. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. We are not to fear the future. We are to fear God alone. However, we are warned to prepare for the future, to plan, and to prepare ourselves for adversity. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. As Christians, we're called to a pilgrimage, and that's why Pilgrim's Progress is such a great story, such a great analogy of the Christian life, because our Christian life is a pilgrimage, and there are valleys of the shadow of death, and we have to watch out for Bypath Meadow and the Slough of Despond and being entrapped in Doubting Castle, Prison of Giant Despair, and the distractions of Vanity Fair, and so many things which Pilgrim's Progress guides us to. The great Baptist preacher Charles Spurgeon said he read Pilgrim's Progress 100 times in his life. And considering he only lived about 54 years, that's pretty impressive. To the increasing threats and attacks on Christians worldwide and to assist vulnerable Christians in threatened areas, Frontline Fellowship continues to design security and survival workshops and manuals and now the Security and Survival Handbook. We are continuously developing comprehensive strategies to help churches set up security ministries. Every church should have a security ministry or at least a deacon responsible for security if it's a small church. We need to provide practical, hands-on training for farmers and families and congregations and missions and ministries to know how to respond to crisis situations. At Bible colleges and vulnerable communities, I've run many a security and survival workshop and training course, teaching people unarmed combat, physical training, teaching a whole range of scenarios where we need to be able to take down aggressors and be physically fit for the day of struggle, for the day of battle, which may come unexpectedly upon us. And this is up at Back to the Bible Training College up in Mpumalanga, and had a lot of very cheeky students who thought that they could take down their lecturer. And so we had quite a lot of these sort of scenarios over and over of chaps thinking that they could, well, how about this and that? But they took a lot of fun out of it as well. As a mission of Christians from military background, dedicated to serving persecuted Christians for over 39 years, we've experienced ambushes and artillery bombardments and rocket and artillery attacks and fire and thefts and terrorism and capture and imprisonment. And utilizing lessons learned through these decades in conflict areas, we're offering training for Christians to be able to withstand and to resist violent attacks and to survive in adverse circumstances. A lot of Christians around the world have gone through a lot worse than we have, and we can learn from them and benefit. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8, we are told, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I'd put it stronger than that. A person who doesn't protect or is not willing to fight for his own family is worse than an animal. I don't know any animal who won't fight to protect its young. You know, when some people say that some humans are like animals, I say that's a real insult to the animals. No animal aborts their young. And animals do not commit the kind of evil things that some humans do. No, animals will fight to protect their young. But there's some humans who are so brainwashed that they think the right thing to do is to do nothing. So what successful strategies are there to safeguard our home or church or farm from crime and revolutionary terrorist attacks? If strikes and civil strife caused your water and electricity supplies to be cut off, would you have alternative supplies? If your home or your church was attacked by terrorists, would you know what to do? One of our missionaries, Shelf and Vake, was in St. James Church of England and had considered these very scenarios because we had gone through it in our mission. And he was armed and he was ready and he had considered what to do in the event of when five terrorists attacked St. James Church of England, 25th of July, 1993. Within seconds of the attack beginning, he was shooting back, ended the attack, cut it short, saved hundreds of lives. On a daily basis, how secure are you and your loved ones and your possessions? There are many ways that criminals gain entry to a home, and we need to think how the criminals do it. A full third of them come straight through the front door. And then there's first floor windows, and it's amazing how many people don't secure the garages. And it's very easy to enter homes, often through garages, which are right next to the home, and the back door. See, I remember when I grew up, the back door was never locked. If the front door was locked, you could always come in the back door. And then there's much less to come in through the second floor, but that's another way. And many people don't think of putting a bolt on the trapdoor in their roof either, or attic. And so there's a whole lot of precautions we can take. At this time of crime and violence and instability and increasing threats against Christians worldwide, it's necessary to be prepared. That's the motto of the Scouts, be prepared. So how can we secure our home? Well, here's some Zurich Insurance analysis. This is what they've put and was published by the Central Bank of Ireland, that 45% of homes don't have an alarm, 27% use timed light switches, 16% share holiday plans on social media so people can tell, oh, they're not going to be there for X amount of time and so on. 25% leave windows open when leaving the house, and 38% leave the house without setting the alarm. And these are just basic home security mistakes that some make, according to the Zurich Insurance Company. So, first of all, your external perimeter, the boundary of your property. High walls, fences or hedges, topped sometimes with spikes or fenced with razor wire. Round perimeters, an extreme way of doing it. There are other ways of securing it. I like very thick, dense bushes. And we've got different ways to secure your external perimeter, and very strong gates and so on. Now, they put here a whole lot of burglaries that have taken place. In this case, I think these are American statistics. And at the residential tax, they say 3 out of 5 involve a forced entry. 2 out of 5, they don't need to force an entry because the people haven't locked the door or the back door or the window and so on and so forth. So the top 7 factors that stop thieves from entering your home, according to this insurance company, is first and foremost, dogs are the biggest single deterrent. Dogs that bark and dogs that bite. Gates are helpful. A house's visibility helps if the house is invisible from the road because high walls and hedges and so on, and a thief can operate without being seen, that helps him. Grills and bars do deter them, keeping lights on indoors. They're not sure if someone's there. Sensor lights, motion-sensitive lights, and alarm systems can help. But they put dogs. Now, this, I suspect, is from Europe where the people aren't allowed to have guns in their homes, because I know that in America and in South Africa, the biggest single deterrent to armed robbers is armed householders, homeowners. And therefore, while I've put dogs as the top one here, I think in South Africa it would be screaming through the roof there as armed homeowners would be the biggest single deterrent for criminals getting in. But external lights are very helpful, especially solar-powered motion-sensitive spotlights, which are dull light, but if there's movement, suddenly gets into a big spotlight. And if you put that along with video cameras, that also gives a splash of light, and you look to see what caused that and motion-sensitive and so on. Dogs that bark are a deterrent, and dogs that bite are an even more effective deterrent. Now, you get the little yapper ankle biter dogs who are like the alarm bells, and then you get the big dogs who are the ones who actually do the actual fighting. We found that a duck can be very helpful as an alarm bell. We had a duck who made an awful noise if anyone came anywhere near, so there's no doubt that you can have a variety of animals that can help as an alarm bell. Also, loose gravel pathways that make a quiet approach to home difficult. Putting loose gravel around is definitely one way. Crunch, crunch, crunch. Very hard to go over that softly. And so there's different things that they suggest, such as having an unpredictable schedule. Unpredictable schedule. If you're always on like clockwork, this, that, and they know, well, the house is empty during these hours. And when you're predictable, the only difference between a rut and a grave is the depth. You don't want to get into a rut. And so varying your routes, varying your timing, varying your strategy and so on, all of these are helpful. They say that 23% of burglars enter through a first floor window and only 2% enter on the second floor. 22% of burglars go through the back door. 81% of residential intrusions occur through the first floor, ground floor, because it's the easiest. And a full 34% goes through the front door. That's how pathetic it is. Many times the front door is not much of a deterrent. And 12% of burglars go through an unlocked entrance, and 9% enter through the garage, which often has a direct access to the home. So how do you keep your home safe from home invasions? Plasticizing the windows that can withstand rocks and clubs helps by strengthening the window from the inside. A good plastic adhesive onto it, that can also work for cars too. Strengthening your windows. Thorn bushes or cactus placed under windows to deny that area to intruders is very helpful as well. There's a lot that's in nature that can help, and thorn bushes and cactus do their job, like the vakabiki bush. You need sturdy doors with adequate locks and deadbolts. A lot of these pathetic little locks that they use in America in particular, which you can open with your credit card, is worthless, you know, honestly. They don't even need you to put a foot to it. In many cases, you just put a shoulder and the whole door going. If your key security is compromised, a bolt prevents locks being picked or those who've acquired a copy of your key to enter. So that's why, while during the day you can have locks, at night you should have a bolt as well, because nobody can pick a bolt. And they can't get a key for the bolt. So the bolt is something that requires them to make a massive noise in order to enter, which gives you a warning to be able to up, have your coffee ready and aimed, and shoot them when they come through the door. Security gates over doorways also helps. And these days, that's considered pretty standard equipment. So make sure your property is well lit. You can install an alarm system. Use security cameras as an option. That's getting more and more cost effective. And some security window film, or plasticizing windows, I call it. All of that helps. And bear in mind that it goes back a long way getting little kids to be criminals to climb in through small openings and windows through burglar bars that you don't think an adult can fit through, and they can't. Even go back to Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens. They used a little orphan boy in order to gain access through a small window into the house to open the front door for the big hulking great big criminal murderer to gain access. So that's standard practice. Just because you've got burglar bars doesn't mean that they can't get in through using a little kid. So you want to reinforce your doors using secure deadbolts, something that's really strong. And also, you can have not just a plasticizing of the window, but a tint, so it's hard to see in from the outside. And of course, landscaping in such a way that you don't have hiding places or opportunities for them to easily get access to your second story. Planting sharp hedges and landscape spiky type plants also help. Keep a flashlight by your bedside. And it's nice to have these kind of flashlights that double as a weapon, that you can, like the mag lights. those things are more like a weapon disguised as a torch, but they're effective because power failures happen, and also if a person's well-organized and they're wanting to gain access in the house and they cut the electricity and you wake up and it's pitch dark and you try to switch on light and there's no light, well, that's why having a torch by your bedside really, really can help. Keep a loaded firearm by your bedside, and there's all kinds of interesting kind of cabinet decor that can help one to have interesting access and still make it acceptable so that your wife doesn't complain about it wrecking the decor. Keep a fire extinguisher in your bedroom. This may not be the sort of thing the average person thinks of, but as someone who's been in the fire brigade, you can easily be trapped in your bedroom by a fire. You want to have a fire extinguisher. And by the way, if you've got phenomenal burglar bars everywhere, make sure you've got a bolt cutter in your bedroom, because if you ever are trapped by fire and you've got sturdy burglar bars, how are you going to get out? So, you know, just have a fire extinguisher is the best thing. Having a bolt cutter's last-ditch effort if it fails. In a large home, you could also separately secure your sleeping area with a security gate. Some people have to do that because they can't secure the entire home properly, so at least the sleeping area, they've got an extra security gate. Sad that one's got to think like that, but if you can't hear, if somebody's breaking a glass down at the other end of the house and so on, to gain access, then that might be the option. Quite a lot of people have lockable bedrooms and sleeping areas, and of course, again, in a house, if you've got dogs outside, that's good, but having a dog inside provides extra security too. Perhaps you could install an alarm system or motion sensors in some areas, and solar panel-powered motion sensor spotlights keep working when you have a power failure, so those are particularly good. It's always nice to have an overlapping where you're not dependent on your electricity grid. If the electricity grid goes out, that you've got enough solar panel-powered independent solar spots that when there's some movement, you get a nice floodlight coming there too. It provides a dull light the rest of the night and a bright light when there's movement in front of it. So how do you keep your burglar out? And where's your weak points? Well, your weak points, your door and your windows, obviously. I mean, those are the most important. So trying to get solid ones, and most doors are pretty flimsy, so a security gate can help. And spare keys, honestly. It's no good having locks if the spare key is... I've stayed in so many homes in America where they say, the key is under the mat. Or it's in a flower pot by the door. Or it's on the ledge. Gee, I mean, that's three options. Being a house burglar in America has got to be really boring because they make it so easy. It's just phenomenal. And in the amount of cars that have, if we're not here when you come out of church, the spare key for the car is here. They've got some magnetic thing just under the rear bumper or something like that. How easy is that? And the amount of cars you get into, and the keys are literally either in the glove compartment or above the visor above. They literally keep the keys in. So unbelievable. Not that I know many South Africans who do that, but install a phone line in your bedroom, which might be redundant these days because most people have cell phones, but keep your cell number by your bed, preferably off. Yes, I particularly chose that sort because that's the kind of phone I've got. I'm not into these smartphones. But program into your phone key emergency numbers for use in the dark, because either you should know all the numbers off by heart, which very few people know these days. There was a time that we knew all the numbers off by heart, but there weren't that many. But now you've got to program it into the phone so that you can quickly, in the dark, you can't start, not that we have yellow pages these days, but you can't start searching for where's the number for the police, the fire brigade, the ambulance, the armed response security, your best friend, your family, your neighbor. You need to have those numbers right on hand, easily available. So memorizing your local armed response security company or police or flying squad or fire brigade numbers so you can phone for help without switching on lights also helps, but either way, whichever you're doing it, programming or memorizing. Keep a list of emergency numbers by each phone so that whether it's a babysitter, one of your children, friends, someone who's house sitting for you, they know what to phone in that area. It's right there, and you've got all these key security numbers. Install a hidden fireproof safe where you can store your valuables. Now, many people may have a safe, but just remember that safes, if they're made of just plain metal, can cook and incinerate everything inside, so it's worthless. I've seen at houses where there's been a fire, all the guns melted, unusable inside. The documents inside, including the money, burnt to ashes inside the safe. So a safe isn't that safe if there's been a fire. Is the safe fireproof? Fireproof safe is different from just a normal safe. You know, you can just imagine all these people. It reminds one of these burglars, probably some of the dumbest burglars ever. In Britain, they'd stolen a vast amount of money, and they hid the money, the cash, in the oven. And this chap's girlfriend came in, switched on the oven, incinerated the whole thing. You know, you need to kind of... So some thieves aren't very clever about that. I might say also, what are some of the favorite hiding places that people have? You will be amazed at how simple it is. Do you know one of the top places where criminals look for valuables is the deep freeze? The amount of people who store... And I've had people showing me, we've got all of our gold coins in a deep freeze and things like this. Because they don't think they need to lock this because nobody would ever think of looking there. Well, the criminals have it at the top of the list. Look in the deep freeze. And if you've watched Confessions of a Shopaholic, you know that even the emergency credit cards can be stored in the freezer. So just something to know. Keep copies of all your valuable documents at another secure location. I mean, you've always got to think in terms of worst-case scenario, redundancy. So at the moment, they say that a large amount, about a third of people, are operating their work from home. And that means, do you have your intellectual property safe? And then there's a huge amount of access to office files and computers from home. Now, how easy is it for some outside person to hack in and either steal information, corrupt it, destroy it, and so on? Family security. You need to train your wife and children the safe handling of firearms and ensure that firearms at all times kept inaccessible to untrained children. Ensure that your wife never leaves home without your firearm or defense spray or stun gun or if no firearm is available. These are some of the best considered defense items for the average woman. The pepper spray, the stun gun, which is electric shocker, the so-called cat keychain, which got on there, which can be quite a given us. Not as good as the cat's claws, but next best thing. A taser, electric shocker. The difference is the stun gun, you press it against a person and gives them electric shock. The taser, it shoots out these wires which electrocutes a distance. And then there's, of course, the chili powder and keys, Swiss Tech Bodyguard 7-1. So those are some options. But if you want to get really serious, they've got some very serious kind of taser-type guns. And some very serious pepper type spray gels, and the Mace pepper gun, which shoots pepper balls, and of course a baseball bat. That really can knock some sense in some people. Other options, I wouldn't recommend the knuckle dusters, but some people go for it. But these extendable batons, those are quite interesting, quite popular in Britain in particular, where they're not allowed any other kind of weapon, but you can, it's a telescope baton where you can flick it out, and in fact, in especially museums and valuable art places, the security people often have these telescope batons, which can cause phenomenal injury very quickly. I mean, you can break arms and hands and bones and so on with that. If a person's holding a knife, gun, whatever, extendable baton like that can be quite effective. Then you've got these kind of pens which double as daggers and what have you. So those are just some ideas. I don't know that I would ever go for such a small knife like that, but I suppose in the hands someone knows how to use it might be some good. And then you've got some really shockingly powerful defense things. There's the variety of tasers, stun guns, stun batons, stun flashlights, and they've even got pink stun guns for women so that they feel happier to use them. And maybe having this sort of thing in a car is useful. If you're jogging, something like this can be helpful. Train your wife and children in the use of fire extinguishers. Pass. Pull, aim, squeeze, sweep. You've got to pull the safety catch pin, aim the funnel at the base of the fire, squeeze the lever or trigger, and then sweep from side to side, aiming at the fuel at the base of the fire, not at the smoke down at the base. So pass, P-A-S-S. How to handle a fire extinguisher. It's good that one actually has it, because it can be a bit of a shock when a person first gets that gush coming out and so on. And see that your family receives basic first aid training. It might be you, they've got to patch up. And it's important that we all know how to do basic first aid. Provide basic self-defense instruction to your family. We thought it would be good for our boys to get a few months in karate, and we didn't realize it'd take years. And Chris went all the way up to black belt, senior, second dan, and brought back medals from overseas world tournaments. So train your children in martial arts and give a warrior spirit to them, that they have the mentality of not being a victim and a doormat, but being willing to stand and to fight. And I didn't get Daniela to pose for this. She just picked up my sword and grabbed it and started going through the motions. It was good. Christopher's sixth birthday, top of Table Mountain. And our children have never been deprived of guns, knives, swords, archery, and all that. And fencing is a great martial sport. Archery is also an excellent martial sport. There's so much in the Bible speaking about hitting the mark. And sin, the term for sin is to miss the mark, which is an archery term. So knowing your archery, air rifles, and knowing how to aim to please, that's seriously important, valuable in this world today, that we know how to fight, that we know how to resist, we know how to protect the innocent, and we have the skills to maintain weapons, clean weapons, strip weapons, put them together, and always know where your children are and who they're with. And have your children write down the names, numbers, phone numbers of their friends so that you can contact them in an emergency. You don't want to have, you know, I don't know where they were, don't know who they were with, don't know how to get hold of them. That's no good. In an emergency, you want to be sure that your loved ones have a track record of where to track you down. Somehow, it was amazing. I didn't know where I was going. I'd be hitchhiking across the country. I'd arrive in the middle of nowhere. I'd get to a place I'd never been before. The phone would ring, and they'd say, it's your mother. I don't know how my mom tracked me down, but she could track me down almost anywhere. And that was before cell phones. I mean, we're talking about 1970s and 80s, just staggering. But parents want to know where their children are. Let them be able to track you down as needed. Ensure that babysitters are competent to handle emergencies. I would never consider a babysitter looking after my children who couldn't handle a firearm, and we'd leave them with a firearm and first aid and basic things like that too, because you want to be sure the babysitter can look after your child. If not, they're not qualified. Think security. Practice situational awareness. Be alert. I mean, the best ways to secure your home and make it theft-proof is secure the doors, secure the windows. Light up your home, especially the outdoors. Secure the garage, which is a very weak point in most homes, and have some home security system of some sort, whether it's the dog or the father with a gun or whatever. Lock the Wi-Fi network. You don't want people from the outside coming in and stealing info easily. Do you have a good code that neighbors can't easily guess and so on? And security cameras are good ideas. Get rid of hiding places. When we moved into our home in Pylons 30 years ago, there's no front fence. There was no back fence. There was people used our home. There's no side fences. People walked across our property between, because we were backed onto a school and people walking their dogs across property, going backwards and forwards. Burgies were leaving things in our bushes. It really took quite a lot to do, and we had to think our way through security and improve everything, because I think our home was some digs for some students before we moved, and it was a real mess. But bit by bit, security-wise, made it unpleasant for any thief to want to get in. And now we've been there 30 years, and we've never had a break-in. And can say about the mission here, this November we'll have been here for 20 years, and again, never had any security compromise in the building itself. So harden your target. If you make yourself a hard target, they'll find someone else. Be networked with your neighbors. And talking about neighbors here, I'm talking about the Swiss. This is a Swiss home that I'm in, and these are just some of the weapons in one little Swiss apartment. And in Switzerland, they do know their neighbors, and the hills are alive with the sound of music and gunfire. And Switzerland's such a nice, friendly country that while the men must train in firearms, the girls are told if they want to, the government will give them an assault rifle and a crate of ammunition a year, free. I mean, how's that for good neighborliness? And so secure your homes. Okay, this picture was taken in Switzerland as well at one of the farms. I think the Swiss take security to a whole new level. Nehemiah 4 verse 14, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. So how do you protect your vehicle? Always lock the boot and all the windows and doors of your car. I mean, lock it or lose it. Hide your valuables, lock your vehicle, take it with you. Always remove the ignition key when your car's parked in your driveway, even for a few moments. The amount of people leave the ignition keys in, and I was brought up this way. In Bulawayo, I don't know if my dad took the keys out the ignition, maybe, but I know I could see my father's car parked downtown Bulawayo on a Saturday morning. Oh, that's great. And I'd go and I'd open the car, boot, whatever. I'd put what I'd been buying or got from the library in there so that I'd have my hands free, and because the car wouldn't be locked. I can't remember the keys in the ignition, but I remember speaking to some people who said, in 11 years in Rhodesia, never took the keys out of the ignition, not parked downtown anywhere, because car theft was just unknown. And that's the way it should be. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is right now. So the idea of, and in America, by the way, you'll see people that go in, they get the car running because it's cold, maybe it's hot, and they want the air conditioner to go or the heater to go. And so they leave the engine running with the ignition in, and then they go back in, they get some things, fix their coffee, come in and out. And yeah, it's sitting out there, idling away, driveway, doors open maybe, key in ignition, and that's not considered unusual. Well, that's probably going out of fashion in some inner cities. Always use a steering lock when parking outside of your home. And steering locks, gorillas, whatever they want to call them, or a gear lock, can be a nice deterrent for thieves. If they've got to choose between a car with a steering lock, a gear lock, or one without, they'll keep moving. Harden your target, they're less likely to choose you. You could consider having your car's registration number etched on each window, which makes it harder for them to just switch the number plates. Easier to find a car, because if they've got to replace all the windows, it's a deterrent. Now, are you aware that hackers can actually use your keys to steal your vehicle in your driveway? They can scan the house to obtain the car key signal, detectable up to 100 yards away, apparently. The key signal is boosted by a secondary device held by a second thief next to the car, and the car is tricked in thinking that the key is present, unlocks the doors. There's some of these modern cars with the electronic unlocking systems, and particularly this nice thing. I've seen people walking along, and I don't even have to open my doors. When it just detects that I've got the key close here, it unlocks and it can come in and so on. I never have to even put the key in. It just stays in my pocket. And well, that's nice, but you know those kind of cars also can be shut down by the supplier. And you could suddenly, as we've experienced, one of our contacts and friends, suddenly his car came to a standstill on the freeway, wheels locked, couldn't move, had to get a flatbed truck to put it on because the manufacturer had just decided to shut down the car for different reasons. So all those sort of things might have their place where it's convenient, but there can be an awful amount of scenarios where it's extremely inconvenient, like an emergency. So be aware that the more electronic your car, the more thieves can hack in. There's also this way that, have you come across this yet, where people think they locked the car electronically, but there's jammers. People can see you're about to lock your car and they block it. And that's why when you think you've locked it, you should still try the handles. Just check, is it locked? Because if they've blocked it electronically, especially in parking lots and shopping centres, so that you go and you think your car's locked, meanwhile they can come and pilfer. Consider installing a microchip. There's car tracker identification systems of different sorts that enable a stolen vehicle to easily be tracked wherever it is and so on. And I know there's some parents who might get their children a car and they've got a tracker so they know exactly where they are. So that's where technology's gotten these days. China insists that all their subjects have a smartphone, and they let them know why, so they can track where they are, wherever they are. And China's got the technology, and so does America and Britain, of listening into a conversation anywhere with someone who's got a smartphone. Because smartphones are, even if you've got it switched off, they can listen in on a conversation going on. It's not just while you're talking on the phone. Which is just the reason why there's a whole lot of intelligence people that I know, like Don McElvaney, who don't have a smartphone. And Why? We won't get a smartphone. Avoid parking in unlit areas and crime zones. I mean, you might come back and find all that's left is hubcaps. Maybe not even that. In parkades, don't leave your parking card inside the car. And the reason is because you need a parking ticket to get the car out. And so if you've left the parking card in there and they can break in, they can get out easily. If the parking card's not in there, it makes it more complicated for them. Never leave the license documents in your car. It's so much easier for a thief to sell a car. Because if they can have the license papers there, imagine how much easier that is. So when we travel, we have to take our license documents with us at the borders and so on. We don't leave them in the car. We carry them with us. Never leave shopping bags or briefcases or jackets or other valuables visible in the car. Lock them in the boot out of sight. Remember one time I was in Harare, 1982, and I had a nice leather jacket. It was a hot day. I left it in the front seats of our buggy, came back, window broken, jacket gone. Very frustrating, irritating. Something as simple as that. Lock your doors when you travel. When you get in a car, the first thing you should do is lock the doors. Beware of carjackers at traffic lights. They can come up and suddenly open your car door and yank you out and so on. They may masquerade as traders to approach your car without suspicion. Remain alert at all traffic intersections. To think South Africa's actually got hijacking hotspot signs. If they know it's a hijacking hotspot, how about deploying some police there? Or putting security cameras there's all sorts of things. They put up a sign to say it's a carjacking hotspot, but they don't actually do anything to stop it. Always keep a flashlight and a fire extinguisher accessible in your car. Now, it's important to have a fire extinguisher accessible for several reasons. You can't just have it in the back of the boot and you've piled with everything. If there's a fire, you've got to be able to get the fire extinguisher very quickly. For example, we were in the field at the campsite Eureka, just outside of Lusaka, several miles outside of Lusaka, and as the car started, there was this sort of little explosion in the engine, and smoke started to come out to the side, and Grant just popped the hood a little bit, and as it popped it, you could see flames coming out the engine.
Ouch.
Well, at that point, you know not to open the whole thing, because then you get a woof, and your hair gets singed and all the rest of it, and your eyebrows. Mm-hmm. And so he got the fire extinguisher that he used to complain about Peter forcing him to carry out the cubbyhole and just sprayed it through there, extinguished it, could pop it up, and it was that simple. If he hadn't had the fire extinguisher, they would have had to wait who knows how long until the Zambian fire brigade came to stamp out the embers of what was left. So having a fire extinguisher with you is much better than depending on the state, who are not dependable, actually. Fire extinguisher, flashlight, first aid kit. 3 F's you should always have in your car. Never travel unarmed. Keep your weapon on you at all times. Now, keep your vehicle serviced to avoid breakdowns. You want it to be in good running order with at least half a tank of fuel because emergencies happen and you don't have time to refill, and that's when you run out of fuel. It's amazing how many times you break down at the most inconvenient times. Not that there's a convenient time, but there can be really inconvenient times. And so, like late at night, after curfew, things like that. So, practical tip for security when you're traveling. Plan your route in advance. Use a map book. I know that some people think that that's totally out of date, but I still like map books. You've got Google Maps and GPSs too, I guess. And so when going into an unfamiliar area, obtain directions, detailed directions from who you're visiting. And when I hear them saying, you can't miss it, then you start to get worried. Because what it means is too complicated for me to explain to you. You can't miss it. And guess what? You will miss it. You will get lost. Always carry your weapons on you, whatever weapons you can have and choose. But it's no good having them in a boot, in a safe, at home, whatever. Have them with you at all times, and you've got them when you need them. Always have a flashlight readily available on your person and in your vehicle. You should have one that stays in a cubbyhole, one that stays by your bedside, one that stays on your person, so that you are never at a time when the lights can go off and you can't instantly produce a flashlight to frustrate whoever was trying to catch you out. Avoid shortcuts. If you know the longer route, it's safer to go the route you know than the shortcut that somebody told you could try, which can end up being a very time-consuming and dangerous route. Keep to well-lit streets where possible. Don't wear headphones while walking outside. You need your hearing to stay alert to movements behind you. You can't be practicing situational awareness if you are oblivious to what's going on around you. And so headphones, when you're outdoors, is not a good idea. It's just like, I'm a victim. Please mug me. I don't know what's going on. When you're walking, jogging, cycling, go facing oncoming traffic. I mean, that's the right way. If traffic's coming that way, you want to be facing traffic. If the car's swerving and weaving around because the driver's drunk and he's about to lose control, you want to know about that ahead of time and get off the road deep into the bushes and hide behind a tree. You don't want to have your back to the oncoming traffic, because not only could you be an accident easily, but to be honest, how easy is it to come along with a sliding door van and just pull you in as they come past? And that's an easy way of doing it. You don't know what's going on behind you. So always walk or run facing traffic. And vary your route and vary your routine. Don't be too predictable. A rut can become a grave. Walk with confidence and with purpose. If you're carrying a handbag, sling it over your head and shoulder, across your body, keep a hand on it. Don't just have it over shoulder. Over shoulder is so easy to grab. And the amount of times I've spotted my wife in a shopping center, something going to meet her, and I come up from behind, and I grab a handbag off her shoulder, and she turns around, and, after a while, she knows it's bound to be me, but the trouble is, she shouldn't be doing that, and it should be slung around you so that you've got control of your bag. And they've got bags even designed to be more comfortable for that. Carry only essentials in your bag to minimize loss if stolen. I mean, there's some people who carry their entire life in their bag. They've got everything there. Passports, you name it, and they don't need it. Just try to carry what you need and make copies of it. What you should do once every now and then is stop, pull everything out, wallet, on, and all your ID cards and everything else, put them on a photocopier, photocopy them all so you got the numbers. If it was ever lost or stolen, do you know the right numbers that you can get them replaced or cancelled, or as the case may be? Duplicate your diaries or address books, or back up your data on an external hard drive to minimize inconvenience in the case of loss. You never want to lose your computer, your phone, your external hard drive, your memories, your projects, your artwork, your correspondence, everything, I mean, all your contacts. Do you know that, for example, Taniel Reza Mulder of Back to the Bible Mission, she had the entire database, all the mailing lists, everything on her phone, and only on her phone, smartphone. She did everything. There they were in Madagascar, and they're in this bus, combi type taxi bus, and hand came through the window, snatched her cell phone, the Back to the Bible Mission cell phone, with all their supporters, all their financial details, records, the lot, mailing list, with nothing backed up. Gone. And their hosts were so mortified, and they ran and ran and ran. They pursued these guys. And it took a long time. I forget if it was an hour or 2 hours, but the locals finally tracked them down to the area where this person had gone to ground, asked the neighbors, explained the situation. People identified who the thief was. They went and got hold of him, sorted him out, retrieved the phone. But Taniel Reza had a very lucky escape that occasion. But that was irreplaceable information for the Bible College. And you've got to have things backed up. It's so, so, so important. You don't always have a happy ending to stories like that. Wear comfortable shoes that you can run in. High heels are no good. Keep keys and other essential items on your person, not in your bag or briefcase. I mean, if it's essential and important, have it with you, on you, because if your bag's lost, stolen, destroyed, whatever, you've got to have all the key things on you, literally key things. This is what they call everyday carry. Never be anywhere without a pen, a knife, a gun, things like that, torch. I mean, these are just basic essentials, right? Maintain a habit of keeping your petrol tank at least a quarter full, preferably half full. Avoid running out of petrol or diesel, as the case may be, on the road. And the way to do this is to fill up when you don't need to fill up. Because the trouble is, when you do need to fill up, you're often in a rush and you don't have time to. And then there's a long queue. Or, what happens more often in the field, you get to the only petrol station for hundreds of kilometers. This week's special, no fuel. Serious. That happens. I mean, you can get there in Zimbabwe, no fuel, but if you wait, we expect a delivery sometime next week. Wow. That would be great. So on most occasions, you always want to have more than enough, an amount of times that we will fill up, and you know, we've got 90% of our tank, we still fill up because we're not sure what's going to happen when you're going further into Zimbabwe and so on. And there was a reason why we fitted an extra tank on our main field vehicle that we could go 1,200 kilometers with our auxiliary tanks, because it's a total frustration. You can get to the only petrol station in an entire district and they've got no fuel. Okay, you may not think that's ever going to be a problem you're going to face, but ask people in KZN how quickly that can happen. And you're suddenly queuing for? Have you seen the picture of the queues of people queuing for fuel in KZN? Because somebody burned down the fuel station last week and things like that. Keep all doors locked when driving. You don't know what kind of horrible, crazy people are out there that would like to suddenly invite themselves into your car to either grab your handbag, laptop, computer, you, keys, whatever. Keep an aerosol can of instant puncture sealant to enable you to drive on in case of puncture in an isolated area. This has been useful, and one of our people used this actually for a puncture that he had on our main field bucky. However, when he got to town, he didn't bother to repair, replace, and all that, because it's only meant to be temporary. Let me set out on a major cross-Africa mission with my 8-year-old son, no less. And we're driving down the road, and suddenly the rear tire explodes, and we're careening all over the road. And fortunately, there was no oncoming traffic, or we could have been totaled. We're fully laden, middle of the desert, middle of the day, in Namibia, and next thing, this tire goes. And when I looked inside, you could just see all this white, foamy type, creamy stuff all over it. Knew immediately what happened. Somebody had fixed a puncture with that, and that, like any glue, it's not going to last forever. In the middle of the day, in the middle of the desert, in the middle of summer, gone. And we could have got wiped out because of somebody's slovenliness of not repairing the tire properly after. This is a temporary. It's not a permanent. So, again, while I recommend this, just make sure that as soon as you can, you fix the tire properly. It's just a drive-on capability. Always keep a fire extinguisher, a flashlight, local maps, and a first aid kit accessible in your car, because you could need them. And especially maps getting into a place you don't expect, but that you can easily access. Flashlight, fire extinguisher, first aid kit, and maps. You will notice that here we encourage everyone to reverse into their parking areas, and the goal is that you can drive away easier. And also, most accidents happen on reverses, so parking accidents. Therefore, it's so important that you take the effort, you're arriving in a place, you take the effort to reverse in. When you're leaving, which is often in a rush, or you've got a deadline, or you're leaving late, and you've just been delayed, and now you're that's not the time to be reversing. That's the time to be facing direction you need to go, and you can go out easier. It's an old military habit, reverse into where you're going. You can see where you're going, and it's much quicker and easier, less likely to have a delay on your way out. Join the AA, Automobile Association, to assist when you may have vehicle problems. Now, these days they've got more modern vehicles, fortunately, but just thought you might like to know what they used to be like. Inform a friend of your route and your estimated time of arrival or departure ahead of time, so that if you're stuck on the road, if you've got a problem, somebody knows and they know the route you were taking, and they know, wait a minute, you're half an hour overdue, what's the problem? If they can't get hold of you, because remember, your battery, if your phone could run flat, all sorts of things can happen. And if people know the route you were taking, help can be on the way and so on. So that it's better that there's others who know where you are or where you're going or where you were going to be or when you were going to be. Practice situational awareness. Be alert, be aware of your surroundings. Know what's going on around you, what's going on behind you, who's around you, could there be a potential threat and so on. Situational awareness. Can you recognize ahead of time potential threats? There are so many people who didn't, and they became statistics. Proverbs 27 verse 12 says, a prudent man foresees evil and prepares himself. The simple pass on and suffer for it. Now, what I've just given you are a couple of chapters in the Security and Survival Handbook. The failure of government leads to local initiatives. And so in the face of the widespread failure of government and the criminal justice system that we just saw in KZN recently, a lot of communities organized to protect lives and livelihoods. This is not a gun-free zone. All violent criminals in this premises will face severe, accurate, and high-velocity penalties. Now, this kind of deterrent may work. Others have organized volunteers to clean up the mess and help rebuild the devastated communities. Others have made donations like this community, 32,000 loaves of bread that they shipped down and noticed their own security, pump action shotguns and so on, down to communities near Durban that were in need. Others flew in supplies. And there was a farmer, Mr. Van der Merwe, in Natal, who provided for hundreds of truckers who were stuck on the way to Richards Bay and couldn't get there, and the roads were just a nightmare for truckers being petrol bombed, and provided for them. This kind of good neighbourliness is what you need. Now, with regular scheduled power failures, interruption of plumbing services, erratic, irrational lockdown lunacy regulations, which stifle our businesses and our industries, the failed state is leading to more secession movements. And with South Africa becoming more and more of a failed state under the cancer government, secession movements like CAPEX are growing in popularity and growing in support. We need to understand the enemy. We need to understand the threat. We need to know our history. We need to recognize the threats. We need to be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. This is first and foremost an information war. It's a battle for our minds. We need to understand the enemy, his overall strategy, his tactics, and his plan. Basic to any war is accurate information. We need to disconnect from the fake news of SATV, the Clinton News Network, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, Newspeak 24, other shallow, repetitive mouthpieces for Marxist disinformation and the globalist New World Disorder. We need to subscribe to and support the reliable, honest sources of news. And that's what the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism was set up to assist in. And from the Frontline regular radio podcast each week, Christian Action Magazine, and different articles on our websites. We've put as many as possible on our website available as free PDFs to download. We also recommend World Magazine and World Net Daily and Assist News, Newsmax. There's a whole lot of great, good One American News, Breitbart News. These are all good sources we can recommend. And what's also vital is that we don't allow our children to be indoctrinated by state indoctrination gulags. We need education to teach us how to think critically, not state-mandated indoctrination which teaches you what to think. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. So homeschooling is that radical idea that a family can raise its own children without government help. As Ronald Reagan said, some of the most frightening words in English language is, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help you." Mobilize your friends, your family, and your neighbors, and have training programs together. See what we can do to get that aggressive Viking spirit back into our people, to be able to know how to take down opponents, how to fight, how to defend, how to protect, how to make one another better, strengthen one another in our different skills, and to be able to be what we need to be in a time of crisis, on a day of crisis, that we know what it is to be able to defend those that we love and protect those that God has put in our care. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Be strong enough to stand alone. Be yourself enough to stand apart. Be wise enough to stand together when the time comes. Light is stronger than darkness. Truth is more powerful than lies and deception. Put on the whole armor of God. We are called to submit to God, to resist the devil, and he will flee from us. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We are more than conquerors through Christ Jesus who loved us. Greater is he who is in us than him who is in the world. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? Forewarned is forearmed, and that's what our Security and Survival Handbook is all for. Providing workable solutions to protect homes and farms and churches and communities from terrorism. Our Sketches from South African History book, which is available in English and Afrikaans, also are there to help to ensure that our children know our history, because history is a battlefield. We must refuse to be intimidated. We must never give in, never give up. We need to be armed. We need to be prepared. We need to be alert. We need to fight crime, shoot back. It's been proven that criminals are less likely to repeat the crime after they've been shot. We need to be informed. Read. There's a great library of great resources around here. We need to be interceding. Pray. We need to be involved. Act. We need to use our social media to speak up for our community and campaign for self-determination, for a referendum for secession, for independence for the Cape of Good Hope. And we have an opportunity this year with municipal elections planned later in October, and I hope and pray they're not delayed, because the sooner the better. We either go down with the SA Titanic or we launch out in a free and independent Cape of Good Hope. Free the Cape. Cape exit. And we've got a website just dedicated to this, just set up just over a month ago, capeofgoodhope.africa. And we've got the Handbook for Cape Independence as a free PDF and a whole lot of audios, videos, PowerPoints, articles, links on that too. So you'll find quite a lot of these on our frontlinemissionsa.org website on security and survival. Any comments, questions, complaints, or criticisms? Yes. Well, sad to say, that used to be the Cape Practical Pistol Club up in Devil's Peak above the Duval Drive. And it's been burned out so badly, I doubt if any of those tyres are left anymore. That's the second time that place has been gutted by fire. And we put a lot of tyres from our own mission over there for the new one, and apparently it got burned out. It looks quite desolate right now, sadly. But they'll rebuild. I've been a member of Cape Practical Pistol Club for over 30 years. It's a fun place, and you know, they've got a shotgun range and pistol range, and you know, got doors to kick in and cars to back down behind and try different scenarios. It's lots of fun. I mean, that's the thing. Aiming at a target's all very well, but you need to move on quickly to actual practical scenarios, because your target's seldom standing still for you. Oh, I don't know about Cape Town, but I saw a statistic a while ago that 1.6 million people in South Africa have valid licenses under the new Firearm Control Act, 1.6 million. But that's ignoring the other million or so still have the old licenses and still have their firearms, which the Supreme Court says is still valid, which the Firearm Control Act people are trying to say isn't valid. So there's more than that. So I remember back in 2000, in the year 2000, we had 2.6 million registered firearm owners who owned more than 2.6 million guns. Some only had one, some had four, some had 10. So, but so I think we had something like 4 point something million registered firearms and 2.6 million registered firearms. Not quite. Oh, well, it depends. It would be spread across the country, and of course you'd find maybe you've got a higher percentage in the Free State than Cape, but there's a fair amount out there. The trouble is there's a lot of illegal ones too. Yeah. Yes?
I just wanted to make a comment on that. A lot of the people that have firearms don't carry. They're not going to be much use with if there's an attack on the church or something like that.
Sadly so. Sadly so. That is a very important point, that having it isn't good enough. You've got to have it all the time, so that you've got it when you need it. You don't know when you're going to need it. And for example, I've had this happen to my brother a number of occasions. My brother's got great firearms, and he'd often sneer at my Volta PPK, for example, because it's such a small gun. He's got the sulking great big Magnum and this and that and so on. But he never had it on him when an incident happened. So he had broken knuckles from having wound this guy and broke a baseball bat of a couple of chaps who came in at another time, and All sorts of different scenarios, because just didn't have his gun at the right time. And so having great weapons isn't good enough if it's not with you. The best firearm is the one that's on you. Some people may have the stupid deluxe Desert Eagle, but if it's in a safe, it's not much help, is it? Yes, Alison.
I just wanted to ask, the process for getting a gun license now, can be up to a year. Is there a way to accelerate that process?
Yes, if you become a member of GOSA, Gun Owners of South Africa, they've got lawyers that actually help you to make it happen faster. For example, when I first applied for my relicensing, sure, I waited 4 years for no reply, asked more, waited another year, and I finally got a refusal.
Wow.
For all five. So I told GOSA lawyer, he wrote a letter. Within a few weeks, I had all of them approved. So, it just goes to show how these things can drag out. But I didn't have the reason to call on the lawyer until they'd refused.
Okay.
And, but first of all, you've got to get a firearm competency license, which isn't difficult. It's basically test, and it involves theory and practical and knowing the laws and so on. And but then afterwards, you choose the firearm, you put down deposit, then you get the license application for the individual guns. Now, in some place like Germany, you get licensed, and then you're licensed for whatever firearms you choose. In South Africa, the firearm gets licensed, every single one of them, every time they want you to re-fingerprint and this and that, and as though there's no record system. So the system here is more long-winded, but it works, it can be done. It's just obstacles you've got to go through.
Yeah. Would GOSA be able to assist with the whole competency process too? Yes. Getting that approved also takes about 6 months. So about 6 months for...
No, they can. They help you to craft your letters and guidance and so on. You just got to become a member, and they're very helpful.
Okay.
There was SAGA, Southern Gun Owners Association, is still operational, but we found they were a bit too soft. So Charles and I started GOSA, Gun Owners South Africa, back over 20 years ago,
okay,
right here, in fact. And GOSA is now bigger and has tackled them and won cases in court nationally, and made the government back down a number of occasions. For example, we started particularly because Thabo Mbeki was trying to disarm everyone back in the year 2000, Firearm Control Act 2000. We marched people to Parliament, and we were debating on national TV, and we found that the other firearm groups were being a bit too weak and willing to accept too much, and so GOSA was started with we modelled it on Gun Owners of America. Larry Pratt, we had brought out a number of occasions, head of Gun Owners of America, and using their insights, we did a lot more effective operations, which forced the government to back down totally. Thabo Mbeki was defeated in Parliament and in the High Court on this heavily. So, yes, the fact that we still have our firearms is the main reason why law and order was restored in KZN so quickly, because of legal firearm owners who protect their communities when the police and army weren't anywhere to be seen. I would say the gun control debate is finished in South Africa, because what just happened up in KZN, Gauteng, destroys the government's argument. Because they were saying, you don't need a firearm, the government will look after you, the police will look after you. But when we needed them, the police were nowhere to be seen. Gone. Sometimes spectators. And you can actually see films of the police in large numbers standing by watching while looters just ripped a shopping centre to pieces.
The pictures you showed, like that, this is a high jack zone, and
yes,
it's all very well, and they don't do anything about it. And another thing is, like, cell phones get stolen. We all know they can track us anytime they like, but suddenly the police can never track to find a stolen laptop or cell phone. There's definitely IT people that can
find
these things easily. They know the ways to do it.
Yes.
And then I was listening to somebody who was talking about an anarcho-tyrannical state, where the state has the power to actually stop almost all crime. And they don't do it, but they actually, by design, they deliberately not do it. If you've heard of that.
Yes. Sure.
So it's like they've left you to their mercy,
yes,
of the criminals, basically.
And yes.
Now,
so,
what's in it for the state?
Well, in many cases, they are the criminals. We've had the case of several police commissioners in a row, dating back to the 1990s, who turned out to, well, they had to fire them and prosecute them because they were in league with the organized crime. Gangsters, remember Celebi and all that? No, we've had a lot of these cases. It's many. In fact, they've. Do you remember that hideous murder of Brendan Horner last year? They've just arrested five policemen in connection with his murder.
No.
Yes. Five police officers in the Free State have been arrested for this. Yes.
No.
That crucifixion type murder.
No.
Yeah. Brendan Horner last year. That's right. Just about a year ago. So, I don't know if you saw that news. I posted it on the Gun Owners of South Africa Facebook page just recently. Five police officers arrested in connection. And it was the local Freedom Front and AfriForum who provided the leads and presented to the state to bring about these arrests. It's not even that the police were doing their job themselves. The evidence was done by civil groups and... but the evidence is apparently crushingly overwhelming, or they wouldn't have arrested them. But you can't put terrorists and criminals in police uniform and think it's going to make them honest.
But I'm also referring to large corporations like Telkom and these guys that track us quite happily.
Yeah, well, many of them are communist terrorist cadres, yeah. Members of the Southern Communist Party who've been given that position. And so what do you expect? Yes, so I've had explained to me by top policemen that they have the ability to track any cell phone.
Yeah.
They can track computers. They can track many of the modern vehicles. They can track the vehicles too. So in many cases, just a lack of will. So there's some very high-paid companies, security companies, which are, you know, ex-special forces and that sort of type of people. You can approach them now. It'll cost a fortune, but they will track down. And there were cases... somebody went missing from a family that's had enough money to fork this out, and one is that using the cell phone, they tracked it down, found the person, all the rest, and so on. Unfortunately, the person was murdered by then. But so I've been given these sort of details from people like Colonel Scott Vaskarki that there are companies that'll do it, and because they've got the ability, we know the government's got the ability, they know they've got the ability. You can track people through their cell phones. You can track them down to exactly where they are, to the address, to the room.
And then you can also download apps to track your own cell phone. So maybe if you've got a kid, you download an app and that's on their phone all the time.
Some people have that.
And then you can log in anywhere where you get a computer and you can see it. But then I find that they make it quite difficult. It's not just so easy to get that app and to log it. They just resist. They don't want you to be able to track.
They do. No, indeed. So there's good technology. So, for example, there are some communities that have neighborhood watch forums where they've got the means of tracking every cell phone in the area. Like, for example, I can even arrive with my dumb phone in London. And if I switch it on, I suddenly get welcome to London and they're trying to sell me things.
Yep.
And that's not even a smartphone. So we've known for a long time that this ability exists. So... what they've got for these neighborhood watches, they buy this and they can track every phone. Now, if you live there, you register. So they know these phones are just whitelisted, so that's fine. But if a foreign phone comes in this area, the alarm sort of goes, and they're just driving through, that's fine. But if they stop or they go off the main road, they'll send a car, sorry, are you lost, can we help you? And these are criminals cruising the area. And they can track people that way. And even with the cell phones off, they can track them.
Wow.
So this is technology that's been used in quite a few neighborhood watches. They've retrieved people. One doesn't want to talk about too much because this technology is being used. But the government's not using it, as far as we know.
I know also that the state of Israel seem to have glommed onto a lot of these cyber security type of endeavors, and they seem to control a lot of this intel. Unfortunately, they're not as on our side.
Well, the people with the most surveillanced society on the planet is Great Britain. Britain has always had the most advanced intelligence service. They've always been the most in terms of eavesdropping. They used to be opening letters without people knowing. Now they're listening into everything. GCHQ, the whole lot, they've been monitoring the phones. Nobody in the world is more monitored. And I don't think there's a city in the world with more closed circuit TV cameras in London and facial recognition. And I've noticed for many years now, when I've come into Britain, every time, face this camera and they get your imprint, they want your fingerprints and all this, and they are tracking millions of people. And that's why immediately after a bombing or something, they know everything about those terrorists who did. They've got all their details. Because you can't go through the underground without getting facial recognition and all the rest of it. And so, you know, they can follow you.
And then again, there's an example of the narco tyranny where Jill Dando was murdered, a famous reporter in London, and couldn't get any sort of solid security footage, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's not possible.
Yeah, and then they were saying that she was murdered by Serbian nationalists, and they found some sort of street bum that they claimed he did it.
Hmm.
In the meantime, she was investigating BBC pedophilia and other stuff that they never mentioned.
Sure.
Never got mentioned.
Any other questions, comments, observations on this?
When you talk about the phone being off and they can track you, are you talking about power off or data, you know, curtain mode?
It can be switched off and they can still track you. Yes. Actually, that's about it. Taking out your battery is about the only way of them not being able to track it. And I wouldn't be convinced that that does it necessarily also, because isn't there backup battery even after that main battery is removed?
Almost all modern phones, you can't take the battery out
anymore.
They've made that, and I think the reason is for this very purpose, because being able to take the battery out has undermined a lot of their purposes. So, fortunately, I've got the kind of phone you can take the battery out. But then mine is a very, very, very dumb phone. I don't want a phone that's more intelligent than me. So, you know. And this, you can take the battery out. But still, a lot of these modern ones, they're very funny. Yeah. And Red China's open. Every person has to have their smartphone. They've got to have it on them at all times. And they make no bones about it. So we can track you. And all the people in China, and that's the way they work. And do you remember there was, I don't know if it was a Bond film, there was something out there where some cell phone company was handing out free cell phones to everyone so they could track them, program them, part of the globalist agenda, and thought, well, it's not too much of a weird scenario for fiction film anymore. There is some way where they can actually track you to a large extent. So, for example, right now, you can be on your computer, say, most people be on their phone, and I'm communicating with people about Middle Ages and archery in the Middle Ages. Next thing, things are coming up inside trying to sell me things relating to archery in the Middle Ages. My wife's busy discussing with some friends about some quilting patterns. The next thing, a whole lot of quilting ads come up there. They have got, right now, from an advertising point of view, they're building up your preferences, your likes, your interests, your affiliations and friends and networks. And they're eavesdropping to an extent to be able to know how to tailor-make advertising for you at this particular time in your life and so on. Now, if companies can do that for your customers, can governments do that for their own nefarious purposes? Well, yes, they can, and they do. And this is where we're going, is we're going to a place where they're trying to control people, control how you think, what you think, and what you think about.
Sure.
It's not just a scenario, it's actually here already.
How long does your phone's battery last?
My phone, I've got to recharge about every 2 weeks, I think. Yeah. I mean, I must say, sometimes I don't for a month because I haven't used it at all. But I switch it on if I'm traveling somewhere. It's primarily, I mean, I don't need a cell phone most of the time. It's just if I'm on a road and a breakdown or need some help or I'm late for a meeting. So that's the only reason I've got it. My computer and landline's adequate for every other communication, I mean. Or the PO box. It's nice to let technology be your servant. You never want technology to be your master. It's a dangerous servant, it's a fearful master. Any other questions or comments on this? Yes.
Siphon machines in an embassy.
Yes. Well, one of the funny things that the Russians did is they put a camera into the photocopy machine in the patents office, and they photocopied every single patent and so on. They were stealing the industrial technology of Britain and America and so on. I mean, brilliant. Just to let you know that the Roe v. Wade film, which we showed a few weeks ago, has arrived. We've got it in the Chris Novicki bookshop, so if anyone wants to be showing it, it's in the library as well. But, warning, it is region one. It's from America. If you've got a multi-region or if you've got a computer that can handle it, fine. But if you put an average South African DVD player, which is region two, it won't work. So unfortunately, they're not making it available yet in region two. But we just had Daniel's father come from California and he brought some copies over for us. So we've got some American discs. At any rate, this makes it possible for people to show this film in different places as well. Any other questions or comments? Some of you might like to see some of the pictures we've got from recent events here. Here's just, for those of you who missed our musical extravaganza, just over a month ago, month and a half ago, we had up here in the upper room a musical event specifically for the birthday of Jessica and Francis. But there was such a lot of talent here, and I think that we could have had this presented at a Nico Milan Artscape presentation. It was very good quality. I mean, many of these presentations would have been perfectly at home in the Cape Town City Hall. So I hope at some stage we can do this again for those who missed out. We should have another musical accompaniment. There was so much shared there. It was a really tremendous... was any of this videoed? Well, I think it would be really nice if that was made available. So on. At any rate, I've just got these put into PowerPoints recently. Thanks to Alishka for organizing that. And it was a lovely afternoon, although I did worry about some of the people. Do you see the size of those stiletto heels? I was wondering if our floor would survive, but fortunately, it seems to have managed. Fortunately, the ladies were very lightweight, but I mean, oh, gee, those stilettos. I don't know if the builders had in mind of whether we should have a sign at the bottom saying, no stilettos, please. But this is just a magnificent musical accompaniment. We've got a lot of talent here, and okay, not everyone appreciates it as much. We can do all kinds of events up here, and I think that we should do more musical cultural events. So that's just a few of what was on that weekend. I had no idea what we were in for. It was a big surprise. I just thought there's a birthday event up here. And afterwards, we had all sorts of musicians joining in for a happy birthday, which was beautifully done. There's the musicians. So, hopefully, if you've got musical talent and you want to expand it, join these dear people. We've got other interesting ones. Here's some of the Great Commission course events that we've got. This is, anyone been here before? Paradise. It's the ruins of what was the hut for the log person, the forester up in Newlands Forest. So these are just some of the different pictures that were taken by Angelo. This is some of his selects. Great Commission course, outreaches, masquerade in the shopping centres. Workshops, vehicle and film workshops, just a minute, and Bible drill, rainbow, pot of gold at the end of that, and eagle encounter. This is absolutely magnificent. This is one of the fastest birds in the world, a peregrine falcon, and some strange owls. And unfortunately, we had to play the masquerade out there to some extent, but very, very happy little eagles and owls. And I wasn't wearing a hat, so I got an acupuncture kind of head sculpt massage. There's some really good action shots taken here. I mean, just look at him banking there. And this is to catch the rodents at the end of the rope. And the bearded dragon, very nice lizard. I think he could be used for advert for Nivea cream. This is what happens if you don't if you don't use cream on your skin. And we had some model there as well, hiking up to Lion's Head on the Lion's Head sunset hike. There's interesting observations. Went up in the daytime and stayed for Sermon on the Mount, and then, good opportunities of caring for the birds. Oh, this was the morning hike. Right, okay. This was the early morning hike up Lion's Head. Right. The other one comes later. But they've renovated quite a lot. They've put in extra chains. They've provided quite a lot of improvements. So here we are on Just a Minute. And can anyone guess what day of the month this was?
4th of July.
4th of July, indeed, yeah. No, 4th of July. And then Literature for Africa, practical. Not offloading on this occasion, but loading 4 tons of World Missionary Press Gospel booklets had to go. And enjoying some of the practicals here, EE. So that's one of the selects. And I've got here's some other of Angelo's selects. Our main picks, top of Lion's Head, this was the sunset hike. And preparing for the Table Mountain hike. No, this is still Lion's Head hike. So this is up on Friday evening for a sunset hike. On top, we read through Sermon on the Mount from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5 through 7, sang a whole range of good hymns, and with the lights coming on and the sun going down, these are some of our picks before descending in the dark. That's the one decent night hike we had. Normally a Table Mountain hike, we'd do that and then come down in the dark, but, well, with Cyril's level 4, that made that harder. Beach cleanup. This was Calvin's idea of a practical, and I think that was very constructive. 16 bags, was it? To load up. Just, you know, when you look at a lot of these things, I think a lot of these are thrown overboard ships. It just shows the amount of ship debris, the beach pollution. It's not just done by people on land. A lot of it's done by the ships passing by, and that really is criminal. Plastic pollution kills sea life. It's vital that we care for our environment, and you wouldn't have guessed this is the middle of winter, would you? And, yep, this is one of our group picks, and here's the fun of WMPPT and the joys of, if anyone could do planks, but let's do it with a 5 kilo box of literature on your back. What sick sadist came out with these ideas, huh? WMPPT, and now the Table Mountain hike going up from, yes, some people were just showing how good they are at gymnastics and balancing. Starting at Kloof Neck, going through, now that's Fountain Ravine, which is a very deadly one. Swiss mountaineers have died in that one, and that's Blinkwater, which we used to use, but for erosion reasons, they closed that down. That used to be our old ways up. We did Castile's Port, diagonal, up to Castile's Port. This is what it now says going up to Blinkwater, which I thought Blinkwater was one nice ways up in the past, but apparently not anymore. So, Table Mountain hike. We had a little bit of a shower. Came down while we were climbing up, and somebody had to repair shoes on the way. The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Always good to get a hiking stick. So we had all kinds of weather. Typical Cape Town, I think we had 4 seasons in one day. And this is looking out above Camps Bayway, where we came up. and then heading towards the dam. So it looks a bit like what you'd imagine Scotland's moors looking like on top. But this dam was built in the 1890s, and a phenomenal dam. I think everyone was ready for water sports out there by this stage. And this is the second dam that leads into it too. Beautiful rainbow. We saw quite a few rainbows that day. Absolutely magnificent. And Heinrich decided to take the easy way down. So that's just another one of... So we don't have all of them, but these are just... So those are two of the selects from Angelo's. If anyone else has got any that they have collected, do share it with us, and we'd be glad to be able to share with others. These are pictures I took at the Eagle Encounter. So if anyone's got any other pictures they'd like to share with us, and we'll gladly make them available. These are on the server, and Angela can make them available. I've got them also on flash drive. We'll share with anyone who wants, and we'll try and find a way that you can download them. Soon we'll be up. I've started to upload some of these pictures on to our Great Commission Camp and Course Facebook page. That there's some absolutely magnificent pictures here, lovely birds. Now, when you see these birds having these light eyes, it's so that they can see better in the dark. And this sort of thing, he's probably got night sight capability. Some of these owls can actually hear a mouse's heartbeat at 20 feet away. And eagles can have eyesight so good that they can see 8 to 12 to even 20 times better than people. And if you had an eagle that could read, you could put a newspaper 300 yards away. That's 3 football field lengths away, and they could read fine print. That's how good an eagle's eyesight is. But the owls are magnificent, because owls, the average owl family, barn owl family, will be able to take out something in the region of 2,000 rodents in a year. So any farmer should be thrilled to have an owl on their property. We're just building an owl house out here to try and attract some owl family from the common to use our mission as a base. And here's this chap who was jumping around on people's scalps. It's a magnificent opportunity to interact with these animals. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. And these little, this is one of the little falcons. If anyone else has pictures they'd like to share with us, I'll be trying to put some of the best of these up soon. And we've just had so many different deadlines coming up, and we didn't expect all the drama that's come out of the riots over the last few weeks, which has led to more radio and TV programs than normal for me. Here are some of my attempts. You can see the difference between my camera and Angelo's. He was putting it on multiple. This is why he got some of those very good ones. But I did not put mine on the speed. But, I mean, these vultures really give you that impression of... didn't you have school teachers like that? The secretary bird, great snake killers as well. Yeah, I've met people like this. Yeah. Yep, I've met people like these too in the army as well. In fact, if you look at birds, I think that every bird can remind you of a certain type of person. And then there's some kind of fish that remind you of different types of people too. And these are great, the bearded dragon. Makes anyone's skin look good next to that, doesn't it? Yeah. So, comments, observations, anyone's anecdotes on visiting the Eagle Encounter, Cheetah Outreach? Got just the right t-shirt for it. That's like a little dinosaur there. And these foxes were really friendly. I was amazed at how easy it was to interact with them. They'd let you in and even let you stroke them. I don't know what Jeremy thought that stick was going to do, but anyway. Notice that beautiful long tail. I think in this kind of weather, that sort of serves as their scarf and their sleeping bag all rolled in one. So, we'll try and put... I didn't get a chance to edit everything together yet for the GC, but we'll be uploading them as best we can soon. I thought some of you would like to see what we've got. So, we've got some of these on a flash drive. I can lend to anyone who wants, and Angela will be putting on some means that you can download. Otherwise, start looking on Great Commission Camp and Course on Facebook. Any other anecdotes, comments? Delinda, do you want to make an announcement about if anyone wants to be involved in outreaches? So, you know, Women's Day is coming up on the 9th of August. That's Monday following week. We're looking for volunteers to get involved in different shopping centres for distributions. That's right, Monday, 9th of August, National Women's Day, public holiday. We've done outreaches since 1995 there.